Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I am your host, Daniel Fisher, and along with me, I have the Martin Luther to my diocese, Mike Perna.
Well, I don't...
I just threw you off on that one, didn't I?
As a student of church history, I have some very complicated thoughts. As a response to the statement you just made.
That was a last minute one based upon the topics that we're thinking about discussing tonight.
I just know that I have stood at churches that Martin Luther started, and I have stood at the place where he said, "Here I stand, I can do no other." And I have stood at the place where he had some very colorful things to say about the Jewish people.
Well, we don't want to go to that part. We're just more talking
about... I'm just saying, I have very complicated feelings about what you just said.
Sorry. Well, I apologize. It's just been a day, Mike. It's been a day.
I'll tell you what, though. It completely, you know, non sequitur, as often we do. As often your random, whatever the call-outs that you do in the beginning will often create non sequiturs. Let's at least do something that's related to, like, church and faith and stuff. What a thought.
Yeah. And then boom.
because yeah, like church history, if you actually study it, if you actually study where we've come from, how things developed, about the lives of these people that have made these pivotal impacts on the way church happens, gosh, things get a lot more complicated than some people would like you to believe.
Yeah, it gets a little dark.
There's a reason why, like, wars were started over some of this stuff. Like, not even one, either. Like, multiple wars were started because of people doing doctrine stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, no, things be weird.
Yep.
So let's talk about games and Jesus and stuff.
Okay. Have you seen that new Jesus game? Just saying.
There's actually a couple. Have you seen this
lately?
I was making a joke.
Because you said talking about games of Jesus.
No, I actually do. We hadn't talked about this beforehand. I do want to talk about some of these things. There's some that are in various states of Kickstarter-ness. And we try not to go too hard into the Kickstarter thing until it's actually happened. Like, I know back in the day we would do a lot of stuff for the Kara Games people, but that's because they had proven themselves to fulfill their Kickstarters. We knew their stuff was great. But there's one that there's actually a game that came out recently about making sure that you can jockey for position to be one of the people seated at the table at the Last Supper. Have you heard of this?
No, I have not, but I need to know.
Jerusalem Anno Domini. It was released this year.
Have you played it yet?
I have not played it yet, but I have seen people play it. And I gotta say, having seen people play it, it looks really interesting.
Now I'm looking it up. You got me looking it up.
I have to. It's worth looking up.
Video game as well. That's coming out, like, I think it's like called the 13th Gate or something like that.
I've heard the name. I don't know much about that one at all.
I really don't know. I still have issues playing like games like that. Like, I really don't know how I would feel. Like, this is gonna a Jerusalem and a Dominate has an 8.1 on BoardGameGeek.
So I absolutely like this because it does bring up the fact, like, a lot of times we have this image of Jesus just wandering around with these 12 guys.
Questing, yeah.
And that's not how that works at all. Like, when you talk about the disciples, yes, there are the named guys.
Yeah.
But there was a whole crew of folks.
Yeah. I think I had one guy actually said there were like over 500, but
I've never heard anybody put an actual number on it.
It was up there. It wasn't just like 12 people.
Yeah. So the idea of somebody who isn't one of those big name guys who would want to be at that table, who would try to do things that would like get yourself into that place to be at that table, to have that ceremony. I mean, that seems to be really interesting, especially when you really break down like the kind of stuff you have to do to make yourself, you know, considered to be more influential, or to put yourself in the right position, or to snuggle up next to one of the disciples or one of the apostles. Like, is it historically accurate? I have no flipping idea. Yeah. I have no idea if the Last Supper was just those 12 guys, or if those are just the guys that got named. No idea. But what I do know is that I'm fascinated by this concept because of the fact that it makes you think about the other parts that exist outside of the story being told in the scriptures.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's true fact. It's documented in historical books that it wasn't just he had this small crew of guys. There was a crowd that followed him. And so the Bible does not talk a lot about that crowd other than mentioning them as part of large crowd stories.
Yeah.
Like that crowd didn't just strangely manifest. Like there were people that followed him. So I'm fascinated by the concept of this game. And I will say, if there's one thing that would deter me from wanting this game, one thing that would make me go, I might pass. Now, maybe it could just be that this was on early copies. Because I'm just going to shout out, the first time I saw this played was by Matt and Aaron Warmbier on our friends at LTN. They did a playthrough of it. And Matt had to describe that every little meeple, it's not really meeples, but like the little figures, had a sticker front and back that had to be applied to them.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at them right now.
And if you go to Board Game Geek, kind listener, and see just how many little pieces are there. I mean, that's a day. That's your day. That is your day just applying those stickers onto that thing.
And I will say, it appears the artwork is more of the European Jesus.
Oh, it very much is.
Yeah, the European disciples.
It so. Very much is. This is some very, very light-skinned Middle Eastern gentleman.
So, yes, that Johnny Cash personal Jesus song that he took from Trent Reznor.
But I do kind of like this as a jumping-off point for other discussions about the fact that something doesn't have to be necessarily historically true to have truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
This is me as my storyteller, you know, my inner bard is becoming an outer bard, because I'm not going to quote the original from Chesterton, because that's like three paragraphs long. It's superior as far as the actual content because it's three paragraphs of stuff. But I will cite the Neil Gaiman short version, which we've referenced before, which is, fairy tales are truer than true, not because they say the dragons exist, but to prove that they can be defeated.
Right.
These games, at no point did the designers, the publishers, or anybody who had a hand in making Jerusalem Anno Domini a reality, not a one of them is going, this is legit how it happened, y'all. Nobody's claiming historicity, biblical or otherwise.
What if society falls, and in 1,000 years, all they can find is this board game?
I feel sorry for our society then. But I have a great appreciation for what this type of game would do. If anything, this game falls squarely into what we give the Inroads Approved seal for.
Yeah.
Because this game deals with very biblical church historical stuff in it. And you can deep dive into why this would be the way this was, why they made certain decisions the way they made them. But I think the interesting part is not whether it's accurate or not, but just the discussions that it brought up. I mean, essentially, you can team this up with the narrative of when the disciples were going, which one is your most favorite, which one is the one that's going to sit at your right and your left. And you can couch those kind of discussions into a game that's literally about making sure you have a seat at the table.
I mean, I just want to be at the table. I mean,
right. To couch those things in that kind of, I don't know, that kind of milieu, to use fancy words. But like, I was talking about this literally the other day with somebody at my day job, because we were talking about what we do at Inroads and stuff like that. And I said, you can explore stuff in a board game that is deep and profound and hard, because what happens when you have it in board game form is that it is serious, but is not consequential. Like, you're trying to win. You're trying to accomplish what the game has put in front of you to accomplish. And if you're not taking it seriously, you're wasting everybody's time. But at the end of the day, it's just a game.
Right.
So to couch these deeper concepts of what does it mean to be at the table? What does it mean to be, whether or not you have the right positioning, whether or not you've used your influence, like if that's a proper use of your time, to use your influence to get to the table. Like, all those discussions can happen as you are making moves and jogging for position to be the guy sitting next to Jesus.
See, here's the thing, though. Like, and this is just me playing devil's advocate a little bit. Like, but like, okay, say you are this guy. You're jogging for your position at the table. You're doing little things. You're being the yes man, right? I mean, you know, Jesus knows that you're doing this.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, and like, so he's either gonna like no, or like, I want to see how this plays out. You know, yeah. and so like, I mean, I understand that they didn't have a full understanding of who Christ was at that point, you know, but like I couldn't see it. I mean, everybody does it though. Everybody does it to a degree, like trying to maneuver to get to a certain thing. And again, with Jesus though, I mean, he would just call that out. Sorry.
Well, and
I'm not saying the game don't play well.
Well, and then here's the thing. I mean, again, I am less about accuracy and more about creating space to have the questions about what really happened.
Right.
This is a known and documented fact across the history of our podcast and our writing and our everything. So would he, though, is my question. Would he call it out at the table? Remember, Judas is at that table.
Oh, I know. But he kind of called Judas out.
Yeah, but not until right up until the point where he was going to do it.
I know. Maybe Judas was the guy who jockeyed up to the table.
There you go.
Now, and what people, from what I gather from my reading biblical history, Judas wasn't just like an ordinary disciple. He was the money man.
Oh, yeah.
He was the guy that held on to their accounts and everything. That's why he always brought up, like, the, you know, whenever she broke open the salve and anointed Jesus'
feet. He knew exactly how much that was.
What? That's a lot of money, guys. I mean, it's so, like, he was their accountant. So, that's why I always tell my wife, you can't trust an accountant. And then, of course, my wife is an accountant.
She is an accountant.
She doesn't like that, so, when I say those things.
But yeah, but like I think this game and games like it do this really interesting thing where it invites you into this space to have these conversations, to have these questions in a space that it's safe to do that in.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you're just having a game. You're just playing cards and making maneuvers on a board. It's not like you're actually doing these things. So giving yourself the space to have that moment, to have that question in a way that is not like asking you to make these deep, profound life changes or proclamations.
Yeah.
But you're just entering into that space and asking, what the heck am I doing with this?
Right. You know, and that's actually something that we've actually been going on in Earth. I know I'm bringing the church up in this one, but we've had a current sermon series about deconstructing. And our pastor says, if you're not deconstructing every so often, you know, if you're not questioning your faith, then how are you growing? Like, it's healthy to question why you believe these things and question God at that at the same time, but you need to fall back into the Word and from there go, you know, go, well, this is why I believe this. This is why I think this way and stuff like that. And he says it's very important for us to constantly do that and not just take what somebody says as face value, like our grandparents. I live in an area where people are like, we're born Christians here in the South, where, you know, like, I've always went to church and my grandpappy said this and he was the preacher, but they can't tell you the day they got saved or came to know Christ. And so, like, they've just always been raised in the faith, and they just, you know, never have that story of, we're big on your, as we would say here, your repentance story, your story of how you got to know Jesus. So,
well, I have complicated thoughts on that too. I have complicated thoughts on lots of things because, you know, these things are serious and worth having complicated, like boiling these things down to black and white simplicity is kind of foolish. But I do to kind of piggyback on that. I do think that there's value in the questions. Like I've done this with Noah. I've straight up told him when I say to do something, I give him the right to say why or what for.
That's good.
And then there are times I do that and people are like, oh, I can't believe you give him that kind of autonomy at 5. Here's the thing, though. There are times when I look at him and I just go, buddy, I need you to do this because I told you to. And then he'll ask why again. I said, we can discuss that why later. But right now, the big thing is that I want you to show that you can listen to me. I asked you to do that thing. I said, we can talk about the rest later. And guess what? There are times that he'll push back on that. And there are times that he'll look at me and go, okay, Dad. And a lot of that second one has happened only because he's pushed back on me. And I've said, you just need to listen to me. And guess what? He found out that if he didn't listen to me, this bad stuff was going to happen.
Yeah.
Or this good stuff that he wanted to happen wouldn't have happened. And so he goes, oh, okay. So listening to Dad has value. And I'm like, yeah, see, this is why you need to be at least okay with the fact that sometimes Daddy's just going to say, you need to listen to me now, and I need you to trust me, and I hope that I've built up enough trust that you're not so concerned about that.
With Sammy, the he will ask why, and the answer is always the same. It's like, you know, your end goal right now is to play video games. He's like, yes.
Right.
And I said, the quickest path to playing those games is for you to do X or Y. You know, and he understands that now. He grasps that. I'm like, I like, and a lot of it's usually with his homework and things because he does not like doing homework. And I'm like, okay, listen, we just have to get through these 3 pages. He said, then what? I said, you know what's going to happen after these 3 pages. Oh, yeah, I get to play Zelda. And so, like, I've allowed him to question, but there has been those times of, or I've just been like the dad, because I told you so. You know, but I mean, it's really important at that age because he's learning, for me, he's learning that I'm not doing it to be mean.
Right.
I'm doing it to help him get where he needs to be.
Right.
And I told him, like, one of his main goals right now is becoming a better reader. Like, he's on the right level for his age, but his ultimate goal is to play Dungeons and Dragons straight up. And I said, you have to be a strong reader. You have to be a good reader.
I have, on these shelves over here, I have one shelf that's dedicated to games that my son can play either on his own or with help. And it's a pretty decent sized shelf, actually. For his age, it's a pretty decent sized shelf. And he looked at me, he goes, Dad, how much of these other ones can I play eventually? And I pointed to, like, no joke. Like, there are some, and I've said this before on here, there are some that you just need to get older. I'm not going to put, you know, hanging on the tragic life of Billy Kurt in front of a 5-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, there are some that are like, I just need you to get older. But I pointed to, like, honestly, like, probably two whole sets of shelves. And I said, buddy, the only reason you can't play these right now, knowing how good you are at games, the only reason you can't play these by yourself right now is because you don't know how to read well enough to read the cards on your own. I said, so when I tell you to practice, you can have that in the back of your head. All of these fun things that you want to try become much more easier for you to get a hold of once you are comfortable enough reading that you can read the cards by yourself.
So, like, it's funny watching them practice. So, like, okay, for instance, Samuel sit there and be playing, because we got him, for his birthday, he got the new Zelda game. And he sit there, and you know how, like, sometimes he'll speak, but sometimes you'll be reading stuff. And you'll see him not push anything. He's sitting there mouthing the words as he's trying to sound
them out. Yep.
And then if you all don't know me personally, I am hard of hearing. I wear hearing aids. That's why I have a little bit of a speech impediment as well. And also, I use captions on the TV. And so, like today, we were watching Quantumania because it was on Disney Plus, and it was paused, and Sammy looked up. And he just read everything on the captions. He's like, he's doing really good. And it's more than, it was funny. Because I have to get to church like at least an hour and a half before anybody else. Because I have to make sure the network's up and running and stuff. And my wife calls me. She's like, Sammy's glasses are broke. Because my son is legally blind. He is very farsighted. And I was like, well, just grab his old ones. And I was like, they were in his bed, weren't they? She's like, yeah. So when he goes to bed, we put him to bed. He's been shutting his bedroom door, turning his light on, putting his glasses on, and pulling books off his shelf and reading in bed.
That's the best kind of problem you got to deal with as a parent.
I know. And like I said, I mean, I'm not even mad. I was like, how they broke? And she's like, the screw fell out. And so what happened was he slept on it, twerked it enough to pop the screw out of it. And I was just like, I was like, I will stop and get an eyeglass repair kit on the way home, and I will fix that when we get home.
Yep, there you go.
And you know, and that was a little bit harder than what I thought, because I have to get that. And I'm at my reading glasses trying to line that hole up to get that screw in there. But yeah, dude, this is like, we were so afraid that he wasn't going to be a really good reader, because the first reports back during the school year was, you know, he's not doing that great. And, you know, by the last few months of school, they're like, oh, he's great. He's reading on par with everybody else. And we're like, yes. So, but, yeah. At D&D.
Well, I want to have one little, because we have to talk about it.
I know.
It's now streaming. We got to talk about the movie.
I mean, I watched it twice this weekend. I saw it in the theater. And I didn't get to see it early release at GaryCon because it was a week and a half before it was released. So they had it in the theater running at GaryCon. And you could get an event ticket, but every event ticket was out. And, like, you know, Drew over at Norse Foundry is like, get a ticket tonight. And I'm like, there's no tickets left, Drew. And so, like, but Derek got to go. And I'm like, ugh. He got to. Of course, I did get my big
D20. I did not. I watched it just because it came out on Paramount Plus. Well, I did not go to a theater. I did not have my big giant D20 popcorn bucket, which is fine.
So how many rule of cools did you see in there?
All of them. All the rules of cool. And I signed up for each and every one of them. That druid went right from horse to owlbear, and I was here for it.
I was like, that's against the rules. That's against the rules. But it's so cool. That's so cool. Oh, that she can't do that. That's too many times. She can't do that. You know, and but like the whole premise though was it's cool, like, and even if you think about it, you can be like, well, she wasn't a beginning druid, she's had a few levels on her, so.
Yeah.
And El Mister, I mean, everything was like, for me, kind of like a throwback, because, you know, they didn't mention, like, you know, they didn't talk about the old D&D movie, because you know how, like, they threw lots of little things in there. Of course, my favorite part was the D&D cartoon characters.
That made me so happy.
Yeah, but Bobby was so ugly. I was like, he's not a little kid. He's like, well, an angry gnome.
Of course not, because those people were slaughtered.
He's an angry gnome. So, but yeah, it was pretty cool. I really liked that part. And I was sitting there, and it was only the third time I was watching it. And at the, is at one point when it's either when the smoke started coming. I don't care if you ain't watched it by now. I'm going to ruin it for you all day long. When the evil smoke started coming down into the Coliseum, or it was either that or the money, they pause on this one random guy in the crowd. And I never really paid attention to it until that third time we watched it. And I was like, that's Tom Morello.
Yep.
And I was like, pause, Internet Movie Database. Yep, that's Tom Morello. So I was just like, why did they just pause on him for just a split second? And that's what caught my eye. So,
I actually ate a little crow when it came to the D&D movie, because as I've already cited in this episode, let alone all the other ones, I often refer to myself as a bard. I have a lot of high respect for a bard. And I thought I was on my high horse saying, Edgin's not a bard. All he is the way I described it was, he was a high charisma rogue with a lute. And then I got taken to school.
Well, I say he fell into the Harper role very well, because he was a spy.
Right.
With
this one, Daniel, I'm just leaving you a heads up. We might be hijacking the concept that we were actually talking about before we started. Because I actually want to dive into this. I had a concept of what a bard was. And now look, I'm a big proponent of there are bard colleges. I joked about the fact that I could, you know, when I first made Drogon Anvilsong, the bard that inspired so much dwarven chicanery on this podcast, our other podcasts on our website. When I first came up with him, it was for our Pathfinder game that Jeff was running for us. And I argued I could not make that kind of bard in D&D at the time. Because Drogon was all about using his axe first and his magic when he needed to.
Yeah.
And that's not how the old D&D bard was.
Oh, no.
Then they came up in 5th edition with the bard colleges, and what was one of them? The College of Valor. Which is an entire bard college that says you swing your weapon of choice first and use your magic only to enhance that. And then it was, I got schooled by Kyle Rudge and Andrew Whiteside. Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for humbling me. Who both said, there's like a half dozen different times when dude just straight up imbues bardic inspiration on the party to make things happen. And I'm like, yeah, he done did that, didn't he? And I'm just like, huh, that's true. And one of the things that Kyle actually pointed out that I thoroughly enjoyed, that I really didn't, like, this wasn't just me missing it. This was me, like, not even in the ballpark of contemplating this. None of the characters besides the sorcerer do magic, right? Yeah. None of the good guys. There's the red wizard of Thay. None of the good guys do magic, except for Wild Shape for the druid and the various inspirations of our bardic friend. Kyle comes along and said, that's a cinematic choice.
Yeah.
Because every other person who does magic takes away from the value of a character of the guy who does magic. And I sat there And I took off my D&D player hat and I put on my storyteller hat. And I'm like, well, hot dang, that's incredibly true.
I mean, if you think about it, though, like, even though that we had this main plot line, we had a pretty good sizable chunk of the plot line dedicated to the wizard.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and his issues with living up to his grandfather's name.
Look, they move this movie along. This movie,
yeah.
Like, if they really wanted to do it, this is an issue where, you know, lately the problem's been they've wanted to do three movies at 3 hours each, and they didn't have the content to do it with. I'd love to see more movies of pretty much every one of these characters.
They're getting their own TV station.
So I would love to see more stories of every one of these people because they all deserve more time.
So I had a brain fart. Yes, they did do a throwback to the D&D movie, the one from 1999, I believe. It was the Sand Trap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I forgot about it because I remember when we first saw the movie. It's like, oh my gosh, it's the Sand Thing. Anyway, sorry.
But going back to what I was saying,
sorry.
I realized something that the whole idea of a lot of this, if I look back at things that I've said about what makes good characters, what makes good DMing, which makes good backstories, essentially, they've used good DMing technique in crafting this story.
Yeah.
Because in minimizing the magics of the other magics using cast the other casters and focusing on the sorcerer's magic, specifically the fact that he was a wild magic sorcerer, I was happy about that. Mm-hmm. They talked about that. He's like, I didn't even intend to do that. That was wild magic.
Yeah.
That gave him spotlight. That gave him spotlight. Magic thing needs magic guy. Animal thing needs wild shape. You know, leadership, inspiry thing needs bard. It was giving these characters a chance to shine at the thing that they're doing. To give focus to the thing that only they could do. And, yeah, they rule of cooled the heck out of it.
Yeah.
But I don't care. Because I've also said before, I'm a DM who loves himself some Rule of Cool.
Oh, yeah.
I straight up nearly threw out the magic. This is not for D&D. This is for Victoriana, which is, you know, to give people who don't know anything about Victoriana, about how that system runs, it's basically Victorian steampunk Shadowrun. They have a school of magic in that thing called, it's basically inscription. You write a rune onto a thing, and then that rune gives you the power to do certain things. And a lot of them are, you write a word, and then you describe to the GM how that word gives this power.
Yeah.
The act of inscription is supposed to take days, or at least a day, in the edition that I used.
Yeah.
The one character, played by my friend Chris, was going to get into a target shooting duel with an expert marksman. His character had never shot a firearm before. And so he looks at me and he says, Mike, I have an idea. I said, I'm all for ideas. What is your idea? And he said, I want to inscribe the word. And I think I can't remember what the word was, but I think it was basically like target or aim or something like that onto his glove. His shooting glove.
Yeah.
And he wanted to do it so that he would be on par with this trained marksman. Because the marksman wasn't going to give them any of the information he had unless he respected them. And he wouldn't respect him if he wasn't a good shot. And now that shouldn't work.
Yeah.
The magic system does not allow for that. Yeah, I totally did that. You want to know why? Because later on, when he was going shot for shot with that trained marksman, and almost beat him, except for a stand-up role where literally everyone at the table stood up to watch him do it. I said, this is why we do this game.
Yeah.
And I would have hated to have stopped that, because that's not what the rules say.
I mean, that's cool, and I don't want to get into rules lawing at the moment, but like, I was thinking about one of my players right now who's playing an Artificer in 5th edition, and we haven't played in a while, but like, straight up, like, by 3rd level, he had full Iron Man armor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and Artificers, he didn't even have,
Artificers are nuts.
And he didn't even have to roll anything. I'm like, roll. He said, I don't have to. I'm just like, let me look at it. And, like, just because of some of the infusions and stuff like that. I mean, the concept of, like, having to... That, to me, is, like, if you come up with this really awesome story, but then it all falls down to a die roll. I love that.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, when it's automatic, like, I do. I mean, I do use, like, okay, you know, what's your perception average? You know, the... I can't remember what they call it, 5th edition, but the... we know it's going to be under that, and you see perception at this, so it's fine. But, like, I don't, it's just like, we got to have that moment where that suspense is just built up from that die roll, and you cast that die.
But kind of going back to what I was saying about how I'd done Edgin wrong, I had this image of what he was supposed to do to be a bard. To qualify as a bard. And I had ideas about what a rogue would do or what a fighter would do. And I've told so many times, if there's one thing I don't like about D&D, which I love about Cypher System, which led me to that system, it's that they make the mechanics of D&D will make you do certain things. They will push you in a direction to do certain things. So, like, yes, you can make an intellectual fighter, but he will be rubbish at combat.
Right.
He won't be able to do what a fighter is supposed to do. That's just how that's how it mechanically works. And so I've often said, screw that. Build your intellect fighter anyway. Build your tanky bard. Build your, you know, pick anything, any other mismatched kind of thing. Make the character you want. Let that story develop. I have said that I can't tell you how many times. And yet, what did I do when this movie gave me a bard that never cast a spell? My brain said he doesn't tick the box for bard.
Depends on your system.
And so, like, I had this preconceived notion of what a bard meant, what a bard needed to do. And my own bards don't even do that. I just got done talking about Drogon. Drogon sang one song. I played him for 2 years.
See, and I play Castles and Crusades, and my current character is a bard, and they have no magic whatsoever. It's a fighter class.
Yeah. And so, like, yeah, I built his entire thing about he tells stories and he heckles the powerful. That was what I built that whole bard off of. My guy only did magic when everything else failed. As I was thinking about it after Kyle took me to school, I basically found myself thinking about that. Like, how often do we do that? How often do we have the preconceived notions of what somebody has to be like to tick the box for qualification? How often do we have this concept of what's required that we came up with? That it was our thing that we built that was never straight out said. Because, mm-hmm. Like, yes, clearly I am going to make the turn here, and I want to bring this about faith, but just like there are certain things that are set up in scripture that says you have to do these things to be considered like a Christian or a good elder, or like there are a list of things. But a lot of times we put on so many more expectations that don't belong there. We give them equal weight, even though that's not part of what actually is there for qualifications to be that thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there watching this D&D movie, and like, if you look at these characters, like, a lot of them fit in the you're not the character you're supposed to be. Because guess what? The other thing you can point out, how much of our barbarian characters fighting was based on rage?
None. And we also have that preconceived notion that barbarians be stupid. She didn't seem at all unintelligent.
Right. But like mechanically, the difference between a barbarian and a fighter is rage.
Yeah.
It is what fuels their stuff. It is what makes it so that they can get by without wearing armor.
Yeah.
A barbarian's attack is supposed to be fueled by rage. I watched that screen. Her stuff was planned.
Yeah.
And other than like an argument that one could be said, like, don't touch my bug. If you've seen the movie, you know that.
Yeah.
That's my way of talking about that scene without spoiling that scene. Other than don't touch my bug, I can't think of a single time that she was fighting that it wasn't just to defend herself. And it wasn't like, I am a rage-based killing machine. It was more like, these guys are trying to kill me. I'm going to use this brick. I'm going to use this thing, this stone off the floor, and defend this and flight there. Or I'm going to pick up this thing on the wall and use that. She's a downright tactician.
See, and I was actually thinking that the decision, the way she acted, was actually more politically aligned with all the controversial crap that happens nowadays of saying that, oh, you're showing a woman fighter, you're trying to downplay the man's role and all this stuff. Oh, but she's a barbarian. Oh, that's different, you know. But, I mean, just calling her a barbarian and stuff, because you know how people get on the internet, those keyboard cowboys and stuff.
But, yeah, but, like, there's all these different things that I'm just sitting there going, but wait, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Like nobody declared her as she is a barbarian, but guess what? Why did myself and pretty much most reviewers I saw tag her as a barbarian? She wore furs. She was kicked out of her clan. Okay.
Yeah.
There are other things in a fantasy setting that would cause somebody to wear furs and grow up in a clan family structure. Why do we have to tag that as barbarian? I don't think we do. But we have this expectation of that's what it is. And
Now you got me looking up their stat blocks.
Oh, yeah, because they do have stat blocks. Of course they do.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of torn. I find myself on both ends of this. On one side, I go, at the end of the day, who cares? Like, who cares about their stat block? I would never use, even if I wanted to use them as characters in the story, I wouldn't use their stat blocks. When I use legendary characters, I don't use their stat blocks. But at the same point, there's part of me goes, but they're the thing, and you're making a movie about D&D, so it's got to be about the classes, so you can't disregard it. But does it? What it? Who did? And I'm just fascinating with this meta level of, like, I enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the heck out of the movie. It's a great flick. It's super entertaining. I love the characters. Like I said, I would watch. Heck, I would watch a show just about the chubby dragon. Let's just be honest.
My son's like, Dad, it's the fat dragon. I just loved it.
I saw, before I had ever seen anything about the movie, somebody had talked about, they actually used the dragon's name, but I forget the dragon's name.
He's canon.
He's canon? Love it. But they used the dragon's name. And Jarnathan.
Yeah.
And they said, these are the guys that stole the show. And I'm like, I knew about the dragon. So I'm like, okay, that makes sense. I'm like, the heck's Jarnathan? Who is this guy? And then you see what happens to Jarnathan. And I'm like, I love everything that there is about Jarnathan.
It was Timberchod.
Yes.
Let's see here. Yeah, he showed up. And first in Dritz Jordan's Guide to the Underdark in 99.
Okay.
So he's been around for a while.
He's canon.
Yes. And I will tell you, on D&D Beyond, they do have the characters from the stat blocks are actually listed in the monster manual for the characters.
Of course they are.
So, but they don't have a class for her.
Good.
She's classless.
I think she defies it. I think she defies class.
That's crazy. And one of the first comments on her thing was, why no rage features?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just nuts. So, yeah. Sorry. And I know, guys, after last week's episode and my downplaying of D&D of the company, I know that it's been a bit questionable, but I still love it. So,
and like that's, I think that at the end of it, that's the thing. That is the thing. Like, whether we're talking about specifically with the D&D movie and or the D&D game, or if we are talking about something on a more level, more meta level of us talking about interpersonally or spiritually or anything like. How we tick these boxes to talk about somebody being qualified. At the end of the day, a lot of it just comes down to how do we love these people? How do we love ourselves? How do we push all of us to love God better? Like, there is if you really want, like the nitpicks that these people have brought up over and over again about the D&D movie as to how it's not like legit with the current or even past rule sets. They're not wrong. Owlbear isn't something that a druid should be able to turn into, let alone from another shape, let alone do like seven shapes in a row. Like, that's not mechanically inaccurate. But
it's still the rule of cool.
But how do we tell this story in a way that engages not just people who love this game, but people who've never played it before? People who have no concept of what this kind of person does. How do we tell that story while also giving space for the sorcerer, the wizard, to do his thing?
Right.
How do we move in these spaces in a way that is not discounting what is true, what is right? We are not discounting any of that. But at the same point, to be able to be willing to say, okay, you do not meet the preconceived notion of what I believe this to be. Okay, well, let's find out what you are then. Let's learn a little bit more about who you are and what you do and what you think. Because that, I've found, has been at the core of everything that I've grown into. Because there have been times when I've been challenged on things that I was told are true. And I said, okay, you don't hold to that. Tell me why you don't hold to that. And I've listened to that person. I've been like, you know what? They have a lot of really good points here. And I think that that is valid. And there's nothing wrong with anything they said. And I really do have to reconsider whether or not my checkbox is in the wrong spot. But at the same point, there are also people who I've said, you don't agree with what I think is the true way this goes. Tell me how you got there. And it made me look at myself and go, no, I think this is why this is wrong. Let me talk to you about where I'm coming from. And then we have that conversation and I end up helping that person grow. Because it's not about checking the box whether you qualified or not. It's literally every one of us trying to build each other up that much closer to God.
Yeah, and going back to what you said about the, when you're talking about, train of thoughts here. I always tell people that you work out your salvation between you and Christ. It's nothing that there's no cookie cutter for this. And so like God is going to use a salvation for somebody that is completely different for me. Their salvation is going to look completely different than mine. And therefore they're going to look differently as overall part of the kingdom in my opinion. And like we always said, there's pinkies in the kingdom. There's feet in the kingdom. There's heads in the kingdom and every part has its own function. And this is to go back on the fact that our past life stuff builds upon that. And so, I'm not trying to tie it back in too well, but I've always just told people that don't discount people because you don't know their story.
Right.
You don't know, like, people don't know why, and I'm going to mention my political stance. People don't know why I'm a liberal. And I will tell you exactly why I'm a liberal. It's because I grew up in the projects. I grew up on food stamps. I grew up with welfare. And it took care of me until I was able to move in with my mother and move out from my grandmother. And then they could take care of my grandmother. And I see how that's important. And today, I don't bat an eye that part of my taxes go to that. But that's my story. That's not other people's stories. And so, that's why I don't argue politics with people. I don't discuss those things. It's like my story. The reason why I have my backstory and the reason why I act the way I do today is because of my backstory. So, sorry. I know my goat trail tangents are.
Do not apologize for that. I mean, you're talking about a lot of what makes us do what we do at Inroads.
Yeah.
Our whole shtick is the fact that everyone has stories. And whether those stories have impacted somebody for good or for ill, you can see how a story has impacted that person's life. The decisions that they make now, the way they act now, the way they think now, again, for good or for ill, has been affected and has been brought along by the story that they have lived.
Yeah.
It comes from a place. And so, I love the fact that it wasn't until like a good chunk of the way into the movie, like you go from, and this is me again, taking back every bad thing I said about Edgin not being a bard. In the movie, you go from Edgin being the prisoner, and then he eventually gets his loot back. He doesn't play his loot for a while. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
He has it in hand, but does not play it for a good long while.
Yeah, and it was hidden in the secret place. I mean, it's like that period where he was not living up to what his promise was.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't touch it, so.
And so, like, it's only after he has been put in these places that, even though he would tell you that he isn't a leader, he would tell you about all the times he fell, he would tell you about the story about, if you really care about spoilers, just skip to the end where we say, the whole dice thing and move on with your life. Go get Paramount Plus and watch the movie. The part where he says it's all his fault that his family died because he stole gold from the Red Wizards and the Red Wizards tagged their gold.
Yeah.
That was the story he was living. That's why he didn't. It was only until he started getting put into situations again where we had the most epic DM-driven NPC character. And don't think I didn't have an appreciation for the fact that I'm like, oh, this is the DM NPC guide.
Yeah, Zink.
This is how we're going into the Underdark when these guys are low level.
I was actually going to mention that there was two theories upon that. One, he was the DM's character.
Oh, I definitely think he was the DM's OC. It's entirely.
Or he was the buddy that could only show up for a couple of sessions.
For a couple of games, and then he had to disappear.
Yeah.
The reason I'm convinced it was the DM's OC has everything to do with when he walks off. He's like, yep, he's just walking off. Just walking off in a straight line. Oh, here comes a boulder. What's he going to do? And he clears it. Like that. That right there is why I think he's the DM's OC.
Well, and at the beginning, I think he's a upset dungeon master because they're all using terms that we would use nowadays. Like, that person's a son of a... And he's like, so you're saying it's his mother's fault.
Right. But that character is the one who hands him the book and says... And basically says something along the lines of just because you left the Harpers doesn't mean you stopped being one. It's only after that that you start seeing him do more of his singing stuff. Where that lute becomes less a blunt force object.
Yeah.
And more of something that he actually does to sing with. And I love that. I love that story ties into it. Again, I had to get over my own nonsense about what a bard was. Because I'm like, he has the lute. Why is he doing? Why is this not happening? Why is this not a thing? And it's because I completely neglected that this is what his story, this is what happened in his story. Like, him doing this, him being who he was, got his wife killed.
Yeah.
And basically made him and his daughter thieves. Like, that has weight. That has a lot going on to it. And it's only through the course of this movie that we see that change and grow. Mm. And get revealed. And he doesn't fit a checkbox, but that doesn't mean he's not a bard.
We could, and I was just realizing this, we could have so many podcasts based upon this movie and all the different things that we find out about this. Like, because I was just thinking about the whole gold thing. It's like he felt that he was owed something.
Right.
And like that right there is a podcast by itself. Sorry, guys. I don't mean to interrupt Mike so much tonight.
Do it. I will continue to allow you to interrupt me, because people don't need to hear me talk. Two,
I know.
My voice is still not 100% recovered, so every once in a while it wants to just hurt. So you go ahead and you interrupt me.
Yeah.
And three, I'll stop you if you start saying something that isn't pure gold itself. But, yeah, like I think this movie, I had expectations of what this movie was going to be. This movie did not go anywhere near those expectations in the best of ways. I had expectations of what these characters were going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
They did not meet those expectations in all the best of ways. I love just how this movie came together, what it looks like. And I love the fact that at the end of the day, I mean, it really does. It challenges. It both honors the material that birthed these characters, that birthed this place. Like, there's a lot of honoring both the schlocky community-based stuff and, like, the deep-rooted, we've been playing this for most of our lives, and it's these stories are important to us. Aspect of the game as well. It honored all of that.
Yeah.
While at the same time being something different to show that that different did not disqualify them from being that first part.
Yeah.
They're being different. They're being something not quite expected did not disqualify them from being every much a part of the stories that were being told in the original stuff that spawned this movie.
I still love it. Sorry. Guys, you gotta realize, like, I was literally watching this movie this weekend, and I was like, sent Mike a text. It's like, I just want to hug my D&D books.
Right, hug him. Just want to hug him and tell him it's all gonna be okay.
Yeah, it's gonna be all right.
But seriously, if you haven't watched the D&D movie, if you have Paramount Plus, definitely look into it. It's fun. It really is good. And I'm not gonna lie, I have never seen. Okay, I'm just gonna put this out there in another one of my talking about what happened without spoilering kind of way. I've played a lot of clerics of a lot of different types and a lot of different. I've never played an evil cleric, but I've done all the way up the neutral and good paradigms of cleric. And I have never seen a scene that so depicted a group of D&D players than the way this crew used Speak with the Dead. There has never been a moment that so crystallized everything that playing with the D&D group is like than what this crew does with Speak to the Dead.
Yeah.
Go watch the movie. It's
yeah.
Fun.
I'm just gonna. I'm not even gonna spoil that one. It's good.
It's so it's hilarious. It's so good.
And each time Sammy was there watching it, he would cover his like, "Tell me when they're done with this part, Dad."
And just when you think it's over, it's not.
No, it's not. At the end. Anyway,
that was only four questions. All right, ladies and gentlemen. No matter what your checkbox looked like, no matter what your expectations, always remember that God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.